Spotlight.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to today's Spotlight. I'm Gaurav Dhawanlal, and today we shall be speaking about a very interesting topic, India's decisive fight against Naxalism. We are delighted to have in the studio with us Mr. M.P. Nathaniel, who's a former IG, CRPF. Mr. Nathaniel, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So at the onset, this is a very important year for the fight against Naxalism in India. And by March 2026, you're going to be Naxal Mukt. That's the plan. And you have been engaged with this movement in different forms of low-intensity conflict across the country, but particularly also with the fight against the Naxal movement. Wanting to understand from you, are we close to the goal and is March a feasible target?
In fact, I have always maintained that by December 2025, we should be able to finish off with this menace. But still, there are a few leaders, in fact, in their Politburo and the Central Committee. They at one time had about 40-45 people. But now it has come down to just about 5. And even those 5 are not traceable right now, but they would be traced very soon. And they are pretty old also. They are in their late 60s or something. And they really can't do much anything at this moment, with so many of them coming to surrender also. And the surrender policy that has been brought out by various states, they are also lucrative, that most of them are coming and trying to find out as to which would be the best for them where they can surrender. So you'll see in last few weeks, a lot of surrenders have taken place. Many from Chhattisgarh have chosen to go to Telangana and Andhra and surrender in those states. Perhaps they felt that the incentive given there for the surrenderies is more lucrative there. And some have gone to Odisha also. In fact, the states are also competing with each other to give more incentive so that all these fellows come out and surrender before them. So it is in that series of surrenders that many have surrendered in recent past, and within the last 3-4 days, nearly 89 or 90 have surrendered.
So that's quite an achievement.
That definitely. And it is a very clear indication that they are not able to sustain this movement any longer, and they'll have to perforce give up this movement altogether. And with no leadership. Leadership is a very important factor in any movement.
So the first attempt would have been actually to crush the leadership, or
yes,
to make them leaderless so that
true,
the movement can automatically slowly
true,
bide its course and then come to a close. We'd like to understand from you, Mr. Nathaniel, you would have seen this, the Naxal movement evolve, this whole thing about when it started, how the local population was with it, then disenchantment. So just run us through a bit of this cycle.
You see, this movement started actually in a village by name Naxalbadi. It's in Darjeeling district. That was sometime in 1967 with Charu Majumdar and Kanu Sanyal being the main guys who started this movement. And it was basically a movement against the landlords by the peasants, because the peasants were being exploited by the landlord. So this movement was gathering momentum in the late 60s. And thereafter, when it started spreading towards other parts of Bengal, the forces were brought in from different places. And it was mainly the Central Reserve Police Force, which was very active. And they were able to crush the movement once for all. That was in the early 70s.
Okay.
And thereafter, again it caught up, but it caught up in the sense it went down towards south and it was crushed completely in Bengal where it had started. But the movement started moving towards south and it largely had a better grip in the former Andhra Pradesh, which now includes Telangana, and of course in Kerala also. But they were not able to really get a sway in Tamil Nadu, because Tamil Nadu police intelligence was quite good. They were able to crush it before they could even get a foothold in that particular state. But they were able to move around in Kerala and Andhra Pradesh and Odisha. And subsequently, when there was problem in Andhra Pradesh because of the Greyhound, we'll have to appreciate that Greyhounds had a big role to play in crushing Maoists in Andhra Pradesh itself. Because of that, they started moving towards Chhattisgarh and Odisha borders and all. And they were able to establish their link with the few chaps who were in those particular places. It was the Abuj Mart which gave them a proper shelter where they felt they can be quite secure away from the forces moving in those areas. So because of the huge vast jungles in that area, the forest, the forces were not able to really move in. And these people were ruling the entire area over there. It's about 4,000 square kilometers. And they held a sway in that region. They were holding their own court. They were running a parallel government. And they were able to even recruit young boys generally from the villages. The villages were threatened and they were asked to send one or two youths to the Maoist rank. And that is how they built up their ranks in those places. And a stage came when they started killing CRPF personnel and even the state police personnel.
Right.
And thereafter, we started getting more active. The forces got better trained and they even got better equipment. And because of that, we were then able to subdue them.
So, in fact, the CRPF, as you said, got better trained, better equipment. And I think what were some, if you could share with us, key pillars where the CRPF, I said, we need these if we have to crush the movement. Because the last few years, movement has actually really, I mean, it's virtually defunct now. It's gone. Mm-hmm. And the CRPF has played a stellar role. It's lost people. It's changed its tactics. It's trained itself. So what were some pivots on which fight against this happened?
In fact, I would attribute that to the construction of roads. Earlier, the forces were not able to penetrate deep inside the jungles. Because these people held a sway over there, they were able to plant IEDs in different places. And even when we moved into those areas with bulletproof vehicles, they were able to plant huge quantities of IED and blast the vehicle that went there. So that was a big problem because we didn't have proper roads in those areas. But there was a time when BRTF was called in. They constructed a few stretches of roads over there. And because of the construction of roads, they were able to make a little inroad into the jungles. Thereafter, CRPF took over the security of getting roads constructed. And gradually, with the construction of roads, the penetration of the forces into these areas started in a big way. Fortunately, the situation in Northeast and to some extent J&K, the situation had improved and the government was able to pull out some forces from these areas.
So deployment increased.
Them. Yes.
Right. Okay.
So they were all inducted into Abujmad area and they established camps in different corners of Abujmad, because of which the Maoists were not able to have any contact with the villagers and the forces were able to contact the villagers and get better intelligence also. Earlier we were getting technical intelligence, we were banking on that, but now with the addition of human intelligence, we were able to get real strong, robust intelligence. On basis of which we acted and we were able to get success.
Right. So this hardcore INT and intelligence gathering which happened, that mechanism, the strengthening of that, we've always believed that for any movement to be successful, local support is critical. Have you seen the local support and the attitude of locals and villagers change over the years as far as this is concerned?
Definitely there's been a change. In fact, earlier the Maoists used to threaten them and force them to give them food and ration and all those things. And anybody who dared to inform the security forces, he would be straight away eliminated. That created a sense of terror among the villagers. So they would not come forth with the intelligence which the security forces were looking for. But with the penetration of the security forces in all these forest areas, the villagers had access to the security forces and they were able to pass on information to the security forces, because of which the Maoists, they were cut off from the villagers. And then the operations were conducted for 21 days, as you may know, in Karegutai Hill. And because of the operations conducted, they were displaced totally from Abujmad area. Because of that displacement, they were all dispersed in various groups.
So the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So then they spread out to Telangana, Andhra and all these places. And because of the incessant operation in Chhattisgarh, I think many of them preferred to surrender in other states like Odisha and Andhra, because they had the fear that they would fall in the trap of these operations being conducted by the Chhattisgarh police.
And lose their lives.
They were very aggressive.
Okay.
So there was a possibility that they would get trapped somewhere when the operations are going on, they would get killed. So they preferred to go to comparatively safer places and surrender before the police there.
Right.
So that ultimately helped in getting a lot of these fellows outside. And simultaneously, because of the operations conducted, some of the top leaders like Hidma was killed and Deva Barse, who was the commander of PGLA, that is People's Guerrilla Liberation Army, he surrendered along with about 30-40 men. So you can well imagine what will be the state of a battalion, PGLA, when the leader himself was surrendered along with many of them.
Right.
And they surrendered all their weapons also, many of them American weapons, Israeli weapons. How they got it is a different thing which is being investigated. But the fact that they had a lot of weapons and now they have no weapons at all, it is going to be a very good thing for the government,
right,
that they will not be able to revive again in the near future.
So do you think that the CRPF is a central force, you have a central command, but the state police is different across different states, that, like you mentioned. So the coordination, the synergy, the sharing of int, that also changed over the year?
Definitely. There has been proper coordination right from the beginning itself. It's not that it only started now.
Okay.
Because we have an IG operation posted in Chhattisgarh of CRPF, who is in constant touch with the state police, IG also, and the DG. And because they are in constant touch, the coordination is really good and they are able to operate in a coordinated manner. The state police has the DRG, that is the District Reserve Guard, which largely comprises of the local boys. And those boys have good knowledge of the terrain because they are from that particular area.
Absolutely.
Like the palm of their hand, they know every nook and corner of that particular place. And in addition, they had Bastaria Battalion also. And they have the special STF.
So recruitment, the profile was kind of adapted to suit this,
yes,
also.
So that largely helped in getting these fellows while conducting operation.
Right. Fighting in actually very difficult terrain, difficult circumstances, and I know training helps, equipment helps. But we've always seen that in terms of fighting equipment, cutting edge equipment was not always available. How did you keep up the morale of the boys and the people in CRPF?
In fact, that depends largely on the leaders of the forces. And these leaders were able to motivate them. And they were able to provide them the equipment necessary so that they do not suffer casualties. Like in the initial stages, they were given bulletproof vehicles so that when they move in that area, the bulletproof vehicles would be quite secure for them. But these fellows also, they are very smart enough. They were able to plant huge quantities of IEDs on the Kacha Road.
And the CRPF suffered casualties.
Definitely.
Right.
So normally what we do is we have a court of inquiry after every encounter. And we come out with lessons learned in that particular encounter. So where we have suffered casualties, we get into it as to why we suffered casualties and how to overcome that. So these things were conveyed to the government also. And the government then brought in drones and canine dogs, sniffer dogs. And because of this, we were able to achieve great success, and even modern weapons were brought in. So because of the equipment provided to the forces, we were able to have gain an upper hand over the Maoists.
Right. So one critical thumb rule of having your ear to the ground is working with the villagers, their social projects, community interaction programs. Did your people do that also?
Once they entered into the Abujmand area and even earlier, they were always interacting with the villagers and they were providing them medical facilities. And even our officers were taking classes for the villagers, teaching them, because they did not have proper schools also. So our men, they had opened gurukuls over there in different places and teaching the young children. So because of that, the education also started penetrating into that area. Health issues were also resolved. And now the government has also come in because of the security provided. Government has come in a big way. Earlier, a collector would never be seen by the villagers. Now even the collector and SP, they are all going into these areas. And even the CM is visiting such places. So because of that, definitely the development projects that have been undertaken, they are proving to be a big boon to the security forces and to the government also.
Right. So, Mr. Nathaniel, we're hearing you say that it was a multi-pronged approach. It was an approach where not only force was used, tactics, intelligence, keeping the morale of your boys up, trying to be one step ahead, and the role of development, community engagement. And I think that's what it takes to actually change people's perceptions, and in this case, future. And they were actually really marginalized areas.
Definitely.
I think a Naxal Mukt Bharat is definitely on the anvil,
yes,
and we are well on our way to that goal.
Definitely.
And before we say thank you to you, Mr. Nathaniel, we'd like to share with you listeners that you can also listen to this program on our mobile app, News on AIR, and our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. And now officially saying thank you so much for coming on to our program, Mr. Nathaniel.
It was great interacting with you. Thanks a lot.
Spotlight.